Welcome to Flick 66, and this is 2020. Okay, we just thought we'd have a little fun with y'all. Okay, like I said before, what was that? Like I said before, this is Flick 66 and our first episode in the year 2020. I am Dr. Thomas Parham, Executive Director of Screenwriting at Azusa Pacific University, and with me via Skype is...
Ryan Isay.
And he is an Adjunct Professor of Screen Studies, and with me in the studio, slash my office, is...
Happy belated New Year, it's Aaron Linneman.
Our illustrious student reviewer. We've got lots of news because we have been off the air since Christmas break and our Star Wars special. So, I didn't even do the weekend box office. Instead of doing this weekend's box office, let's just talk about the box office that's opening up this weekend because we've got lots of news and lots of scuttlebutt with Oscar nominations. Opening this weekend, Bad Boys for Life, which is the third movie in the franchise. It's been a while since Will Smith has had a hit. Oh, did I say that out loud? Yeah, Gemini Man died like a dog last year. No apologies to canines. But he is reteaming with Martin Lawrence in Bad Boys for Life. And it's getting good buzz.
Yeah, it's sitting at like a 75 right now, and a lot of people are saying it's a good thing that Michael Bay didn't direct this. they can tell it's just like a good fun time, and they actually focus on some of the right things for the film. It's cliche, but I just hear that it's a great time.
Yeah, because Will Smith needs a hit, and Martin Lawrence probably.
I think it will because Doolittle.
Oh, yeah. And Robert Downey Jr.'s Doolittle, which he produced with his wife, Susan Downey, is expected to live up to its name, as in Doolittle and bomb at the box office.
I heard it is boring, almost Cats level bad.
Oh, geez.
His accent is really weird, and that's why he doesn't talk a lot in the trailer.
A family film like that not being released during the holidays, that's a horrible sign.
Yeah.
If ever there was a December Christmas Day release, that would be it, because that's you're feeding into that crowd, that audience. January is usually the dumping ground for like horror movies for people that don't want the respected films and have seen all of the family films. People go to the holidays is a huge time for the movies, and January is usually when people are like, all right, got to get back to business. So,
I think Bad Boys for Life is going to be doing, if it's getting like, I think word of mouth is what's going to make it do really well. And I've been only hearing like pretty good things about it. So I think Bad Boys for Life might actually do pretty decent this weekend.
Yeah, and Doolittle when I saw the trailer for it, we just did the reboot with Eddie Murphy not that long ago.
No.
And it's not like people were clamoring yet. What we really need is a serious Dr. Doolittle movie.
Yeah.
Didn't they even make a sequel to the Eddie Murphy one?
Yeah, I just heard this one's boring, and it's like messy, and it cost $175 million.
No! Yeah. I'm sorry. A kid's movie that is boring is The Kiss of Death.
Yeah.
Because if the kids think it's boring, seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go on. We got lots of news, mostly TV related. ABC is reviving Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for its 20th anniversary with Jimmy Kimmel hosting. The Conners, the Roseanne spinoff / continuation without her, will air live during the New Hampshire primary, and they will actually work updates of the primary into the script of the show, which is like, okay.
Why?
It's a gimmick.
Because are the people that are watching the Conners really that much that politically savvy? Like, that's a ridiculous gimmick to me.
Oh, no, it is a ridiculous gimmick, but, that's the state of network TV these days, is anything to get people to watch.
I mean, at least with a live ER episode or whatever, there's like, oh, I wonder how they're going to do it. There's nothing. This is just a media thing. they're like, we can promote this. This will be something you put in news. That's it. There's no real purpose for it beyond that.
I don't disagree with you. I just think it's a weird idea, and especially because it's a mismatch. I mean, if a show like West Wing was on the air, that would make sense.
Yeah.
But we don't have a show like West Wing on the air, and hey, West Wing's on the air, let's do The Conners, the spinoff of this blue-collar working-class family.
My question, did they kill Roseanne off?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's...
It's not going to be like, oh, it's all a dream, like the series finale.
No, it's already been like a full season of her gone.
Okay. Yeah, this is the...
Okay.
Is this season two or three? I forget. This is season two. This is season two. Okay, moving on. Justin Chambers, who played Dr. Alex Karev, has exited Grey's Anatomy. And it was kind of sudden because, they announced it last week and his last episode already aired in the fall. But I guess he's been on the show for 15 years.
I'm surprised the show's still kind of going.
It's still kind of a hit for it. Okay, dude, that's the status of how bad network TV is right now. The numbers are so low that major networks are getting numbers that, you know, basic cable shows can sometimes beat, that CW shows, it's pathetic.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously they factor in the +7, you know, for DVR streaming and, you know, online stuff, but they've got options for more seasons. It's comfort food.
Modern Family.
I'll say this. It's like a lot of TV shows that have been around for a while. I still watch Grey's Anatomy because it's still
watchable.
Provide somewhat of what it originally did. Whereas I watched maybe a half of season of the spinoff shows like Private Practices. So even in those original first seasons, those were terrible. And then the later seasons of Grey's Anatomy, yeah, it's ridiculous, but it's like a soap opera. People continue to watch it because they know the characters, they're familiar, comfortable.
It's not like a soap opera, it is a soap opera.
It's the quality is higher. The ridiculousness of the twists are not to the same level of daytime soap. It's a nighttime soap, it is.
Yeah.
Modern Family just killed off...
They just killed off Phil Dunphy's dad. Played by Fred Willard.
It was touching. It was a touching episode.
You know, that show, what is this, season 10 or 11?
11. It's the last one.
They should have only done 7, because it has not been watchable until this last batch of episodes.
I've just been watching it because it's like...
It's the end.
It's the end.
I mean, once those kids grew up, not funny anymore. Once Luke hit puberty and became a, you know, full-on teenager...
Now he dates cougars.
Anyway, there was no animus, and he tweeted and thanked everybody, including Ellen Pompeo and the show's producers and the other original cast members who've been there since the first year. And then Ellen Pompeo, and when somebody had an Instagram post about his exit, Ellen Pompeo. I mean, there's a love fest. It sounds like he was just tired and ready to be done.
Yeah,
because network TV is a gruel. Moving on, Amazon has ordered Jack Reacher to series. It's based on a book series. There have been two movies with Tom Cruise, and he no way matches the physical description of the character from the book series, but the movies were quasi-successful, and hopefully this will be more faithful to the books, so because the audience, or the readers, the people who love the series, were not happy when Tom Cruise was cast. They've also they've announced the primary cast for the Lord of the Rings TV show. And I've got all the names, but trust me, you probably have never heard of these people. I mean, the big name is Game of Thrones vet Robert Arameo, who's going to be playing Beldor. And then, you know, other names include A Confession's Owain Arthur, Hotel Mumbai's Nazanin Boniadi, That Proposition's Tom. You haven't heard of these people. But you know, it is set during the Second Age which may or may not be the subtitle of the series, and they already gave it a season to pick up. So, you know, people are going to watch it because they love Lord of the Rings. Yeah. By the way, Christopher Tolkien just died. J.R. Tolkien's son, who was executor of the estate and was going through dad's notes and publishing lots of stuff. AMC. Say what?
That's their star, by the way. They don't need any movie stars. In fact, they probably can't afford it because they put all their money into the production itself, which is a good thing.
I hope so.
They have a fan base already. They don't need to have some, you know, nonsense actor that the hardcore Token fans don't care about. I think it was a smart decision.
Make sure they're good and not be like a Bobby. What's his name?
Cannavale.
Yeah, his son was so bad. Yeah, in the Mandalorian.
Oh, he died, so.
Yeah.
We never see him again. AMC has ordered a sixth and final season for Better Call Saul. I kind of suspected that was coming because Breaking Bad only went 5 seasons, so it's kind of weird that the spinoff is going a little bit longer, even though the seasons, I think, have been shorter. Because they've been doing like 10 episode seasons, I believe. Yeah. Apple TV Plus. Whatever. Which I call, it should be called Apple TV Minus. Patricia Arquette will be joining Severance, the drama and she'll be playing Adam Scott's boss. And they've also signed Julia Louis-Dreyfus to an exclusive deal. AT&T is shuttering the Audience Network, and it's going to transition into an HBO Max preview channel in spring. There's no word yet what's going to happen to Audience Originals, Mr. Mercedes, Louder Milk Season 3, Condor Season 2, and You, Me, Her Season 5.
What are all those things you just said?
Say what?
All of those things you just said.
Well, Mr. Mercedes is based on a Stephen King book and evidently got decent reviews. And Condor is the television adaptation of 3 Days of the Condor. So I've heard good things about it. BBC America has renewed Killing Eve for season 4. They still have not attached a showrunner yet, though. CBS has greenlit a Clarice Starling series post Silence of the Lambs, set in 1993. Obviously, they have a narrow window to work in because of all those sequels where they ruin the character. The CW renewed everything on its schedule except the shows that were already canceled, mainly The 100, Arrow, and Supernatural. And they gave series orders to Superman and Lois, which is the new entry in the Berlantiverse. And that's got Tyler Hoechlin, who's played Superman in the past couple seasons on the crossover episodes. And then also Bitsy Tulloch, who used to be on Grimm back in the day as Lois. And they've also ordered the Walker Texas Ranger reboot, which is simply called Walker, with Jared Padalecki. No word whether Chuck Norris would do a cameo of any kind. Comedy Central has renewed Awkwafina's Nora from Queens before its series debut. So obviously she is coasting on that Golden Globe win. I love Awkwafina. She's awesome. Disney Plus has confirmed the Lizzie McGuire sequel series is dead as door in nail.
Really? I didn't even know that. They were building that up, though.
Evidently, there were issues with the showrunner and they had creative differences. And they're like, yeah, we're done.
Wow, because they already had on their big preview for the year a little clip of her.
Well, doesn't take much to spike a show.
Yeah.
FX has announced that American Crime Story Impeachment about Bill Clinton will not air before the election this fall, and they renewed American Horror Story for seasons 11, 12, and 13.
Okay.
So, HBO has announced Watchmen will not return for a second season. I'm ambivalent. This season was so good. I'd rather have them wait and maybe come back to it much later than just rush out something that would be terrible.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing. Because it was only planned to be one season.
Right. Well, but they announced the final episode as the season finale instead of the series finale. So
Just in case.
They've also announced a Parasite limited series from writer-director Bong Joon-ho and Adam McKay. Say what?
I'm so annoyed by this. He just made a speech talking about why we can't get past the one-inch barrier of subtitles. And immediately we're going to remake this fantastic film in English language. Oh, I'm just annoyed.
Do you think it's going you think it's going to be a remake?
Even if it's a continuation, it's in English language, which is what annoys me. Like,
oh, it is English? Oh, that sucks.
Well, you know, it's are we really surprised?
But he just advocated for subtitled films, and like that's what bothers me is why we can't And also the fact that, that he has struggled to make English language films that have done well in America. So he goes back, makes one in his native language, and it blows up in America. Like, so what, he goes back and tries to do the exact same thing that he was failing at before, which was
I gotta say something, though. Money speaks many languages.
Oh, yes. The internet. Hollywood worships one god, and it is green. Finally, from HBO, they've signed a first look deal with the Duplass brothers, who made the 2-season show Togetherness for the network. I skipped over Freeform because they had some late breaking news. Freeform has picked up Grown-ish for season 4, and the season 3 premiere was just last night, Thursday night. So that means that Zoe and her classmates will make it to senior year, and they also picked up Good Trouble, which is the spinoff of The Fosters, for season 3. So, good for Freeform. Hulu has renewed Wu-Tang, An American Saga, and Dollface for season 2. They've given a series order for a true crime spoof starring Steve Martin and Martin Short.
That should be good.
Which could be interesting, because the two of them together are funny. They have great breezy chemistry, and we've had so many true crime shows and podcasts of late. To see somebody kind of do a humorous take on that could be fun.
Yeah.
And they've also announced original DreamWorks animated series, including Madagascar, A Little Wild, Trollstopia, both from DreamWorks animated films, and The Mighty Ones. NBC, Seth MacFarlane is jumping ship from Fox Studios to NBC Uni in a $200 million deal. Boom!
And that was big news. Fox didn't seem sad. They said they tried their best to keep him, but they're happy for him that he got a big...
You know what that means? We love you, Seth, but not $200 million worth of love.
I wonder what's going to happen to Family Guy, because, like, going under the Disney brand now...
Here's the thing. When somebody leaves for a deal like that, like, for example, Kenya Barris, who does all the Ish shows, Black-ish, Grown-ish, and Mixed-ish... He's at Netflix, but he's an executive producer, co-creator of those shows. But he's appointed really good people to run them.
It's just that he does a lot of the voices, so I don't know what that entails.
But you have to honor your existing contracts, though.
That's true.
You got to honor your...
He can still work as an actor. I'm contracted as a, you know... Yeah, he can still do those other jobs.
Yeah. But, yeah.
He'll take as much money as he can.
Yeah.
NBC renewed New Amsterdam for seasons 3, 4, and 5. So I told my episodic drama writing students, hey, if you have any inclination to write a medical show, that would be a good show to spec, and it's going to be on for 3 more years. And NBC also ordered The Young Rock 2 series from executive producer Dwayne Johnson about his early years. Dwayne's dad... Rocky Johnson just passed away a couple of days ago, by the way. And let's see, that's it for NBC. Netflix, oh my goodness. Netflix is expected to spend $17 billion with a B dollars on content this year, which is up from $15.3 billion last year. And I'm sorry, Ryan, we talked about this last year. I'm still a little nervous about them spending so much on content.
I was saying I could see them getting bought out from Amazon if they were to struggle.
I don't see that happening, but I'm not saying I'm not nervous as well, but my whole point is that I think Netflix is making a move. It's significant that they're at the top of award season right now, and they're also trying to simultaneously bring in the other demographics with, you know, movies like Six Underground, like the most expensive Netflix movie ever made.
It is?
They're trying really hard right now.
Wow.
To change the industry. I don't know. Maybe it's a really, really risky move, but... It seems to be paying off right now for them.
They got a lot of nominations this year.
Yeah, they did.
So
fewer people watch Six Underground.
And what?
Good
what,
or not?
What six? Is that the minor?
The Michael Bay one.
Oh, it's the Michael Bay one.
Is it an action thing?
Yeah, with Ryan Reynolds.
just awful, awful, awful action movie. Basically, Bad Boys before Bad Boys 3. Just a terrible movie, but people watched it. And that's all. Like, same with the Adam Sandler movies, you know? These crappy comedies. Yeah, they're terrible, but people are watching them. They're getting viewers for these things. It's content. I see that Netflix is – they're not focusing on one thing. It's not just prestige. It's not just viewers. They're going across the whole industry right now. Foreign films, you know, kids films, reality TV, competition. They're doing it all. Yeah, it's crazy.
I heard The Circle's pretty popular. It's like the reality show, kind of like Big Brother. You're a lot Big of people. Brother for
younger generation.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Speaking of spending money, they signed Bill Prady, who co-created Big Bang Theory, to a first look deal. So I'm sure that wasn't cheap. On the bad side, they canceled Mindhunter after 2 seasons.
But I like that show.
But they renewed You for season 3. Paramount Network has ordered Mayor of Kingstown to series. It's from Taylor Sheridan, who also created their hit show Yellowstone, starring Kevin Costner. And my favorite named on the horizon streaming service, Peacock, will launch April 15th for Comcast customers who get it for free, and July 15th for everyone else. It'll be $5 with commercials and $10 without commercials, which is a decent pricing structure.
Yeah.
And they've ordered the Punky Brewster sequel series. We never punkier, wanted it, but yeah,
punkier
Brewster. yeah, I don't know. I think it's weird that we're rebooting all these 80s, 90s things, as you know, but whatever.
Yeah.
They've also announced Girls 5 Eva from executive producer Tina Fey, and it's basically about a one-hit wonder 90s girl group that gets back together in hopes of, you know, relaunching their careers. They've ordered a racing series from Dale Earnhardt Jr., a bunch of dramas from one of their producing partners, including one with David Schwimmer. And they've also partnered with Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Network. So, okay, Peacock, whatever, baby. And Sci-Fi has ordered a Chucky series because, you know, there weren't enough Doll's House movies. Or, sorry, Child's Play movies.
Yeah.
Mancini's not happy about the way that the reboot changed it. He's unable to continue making the films because they've gone from theatrical release to straight to video release to now, okay, well, let me try my shot at TV. But I will say this, Don Mancini, the original creator of Child's Play, other than the remake we just had this past year, which I thought was actually pretty good, he's been attached either as director or writer on every single Child's Play installment since.
Oh, wow.
I thought the new one wasn't that bad.
He hated it. I liked it. I thought it was a really interesting way of addressing like new anxieties about industrialization in the world.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it.
Interesting. So for some film news, the global box office set a new record, $42 billion in 2019.
Thanks, Disney.
You know, I was going to say, a lot of that is due to the Mouse House. Amazon has inked deals with Steve McQueen, Diego Luna, and Gael Garcia Bernal.
I want more movies from McQueen. I loved Widows. Widows was so good.
Focus Features has nabbed Paul Thomas Anderson's next film. Marvel Studios has announced that Scott Derrickson has dropped out of directing Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness because of creative differences.
This upsets me.
Paramount Pictures is developing a reboot of Power Rangers, which just got rebooted a few years ago.
Yeah.
Except for this time, the person they've hired to write it is Jonathan Entwistle, who created Netflix's End of the Effing World, which is kind of an interesting choice. Sony has announced that Travis Knight may have to drop out of directing Uncharted because of scheduling conflicts that Tom Holland has. Which would be a shame because they've been trying to get that movie off of the ground for a while. I mean, you know.
Another director, personally.
Say what?
I just think they'll get another director.
Personally. I'm sure they will. But still, that franchise, I mean, they want that to be a big franchise film, but the game is on the way to becoming kind of irrelevant. It's been out for a while.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Universal has announced the Lego Groups is in talks with them to develop new movies based on their toys. And Dan Lin, who's been producing the Lego movies for Warners, is expected to oversee the new projects, even though he still has an overall deal with Warners. Viacom CBS closed a $375 million deal over Christmas break for a 49% stake in Miramax, which is interesting because people want some prestige. And finally, on the film front, at least for news, Warner Brothers has assigned release dates to Matrix 4, May 21st, 2021, and the long burgeoning The Flash, July 1st, 2022, starring Ezra Miller, by the way, who made a surprise cameo on Arrow, which was the fourth part of the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. But there's a great scene where Ezra Miller's Flash meets Grant Gustin's Flash. And how they pulled that off without it leaking to anybody is kind of amazing, but it was a great Easter egg. Finally, and this does not excite me at all, Warner Brothers has hired David Ayer, who wrote and directed The Suicide Squad, boo, to write and direct a modern remake of The Dirty Dozen. So
he's really made like one good movie in his entire career.
The tank movie, was that Fury?
Oh no, I think that one's awful too. I think there's sections that are good and there's moments of that movie are awful. I think End of Watch is the only decent movie he's ever made.
Oh yeah. I remember that. Yeah, what he did with Suicide Squad, it's like, dude,
I think you missed the point. I think that was more studio though, meddling. I think
watches up films. He's not a great filmmaker. He loses the thread of narrative almost always in favor of like just exploitative violence that served little purpose.
Yeah. One thing. Taika Waititi's in talks to do a Star Wars film.
I would let Taika Waititi do whatever he wants to do.
I think we should be spending less time about talking about him making a Star Wars movie and more on the fact that he's remaking Next Goal Wins, which is one of my favorite sports documentaries.
Oh yeah,
and he's been to direct that for so long. The fact that Star Wars is probably going to push that further down the line is more annoying to me than anything else.
It's called Next Goal Wins.
Next Goal Wins. Yeah, it's like I see it as going to be one of those little projects that he does that, like, you know, that he's been doing. He'll do like Hunt of the Wilder People or whatever, and then do a big one and then do another little one. I like that about him, but I think that's one of his little ones is going to be this sports narrative kind of documentary remake.
I wonder if he's going to lock down a deal kind of like what Christopher Nolan has with Warners, where I'll do a big franchise film for you, and then you give me money to do whatever I want, and then alternate. Because I could see, I mean, we know that Taika's doing Thor 4.
Yeah, but, and Christian Bale's rumored to be in it.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence. Awesome. J-Law?
Yeah, might be what? In it. She's just rumored to be in it.
Oh, I had not heard that.
And it's just, I'm so upset about the creative differences with Scott Derrickson leaving, because I feel like he was trying to make like a true like horror with Doctor Strange, and Kevin Feige was always like, oh, it's not going to be horror. And you just keep seeing the digression of like this like cool concept of like this horror Doctor Strange movie and leaving.
There were some fanboys online saying, hey, go over to Warner's and do Justice League Dark. They'll let you do it as dark as you want. Yeah.
Scott Derrickson has a filmography filled with like exorcism movies, like hard R. So I think that probably makes them nervous.
Yeah, but you know, the thing about Disney is, as nervous as they were with Jojo Rabbit, which is why they tried to quasi bury it in October, they're loving the awards buzz it's getting. So I think that they need to just kind of like take a chill pill. Yeah. Oh, one last thing that just got announced today. Disney is going to be removing the Fox name from branding. So Fox Searchlight will just become Searchlight Pictures. And then 20th Century Fox will just become 20th Century. Which, if you know the history of the studio, that makes sense. Because, you know, William Fox was... That was a merger with 20th Century.
Will we still get that fanfare, though? That's what I care about.
I think we still get the fanfare.
Okay, we better. That's like
iconic. I wonder if we get a Walt Disney Company at the bottom.
Like The Simpsons predicted.
They need to take a chill pill. Trevorrow's script for Star Wars 9 leaked, and it seemed actually pretty decent. Like, he talked about Mortis and Coruscant being a big role, like playing back through all the movies. It's an interesting read. A lot of people are kind of upset that they fired Trevorrow because they really liked the leaked script.
Well, guess what?
It's done.
It's not the fans' intellectual property. It's Disney's.
Yeah.
And they get to play with their toys like they see fit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, speaking of toys, let's talk. The 2019 Oscar nominations are out as of this Monday early in the morning. And, oh, geez. Ryan, let's start with you. What are the things that made you happy, and what were the things that made you not so happy?
Oh, man, I don't even, to be honest, get upset about awards anymore. I mean, there's things that surprised me, but I was surprised by Jonathan Pryce getting a nomination after seeing the film. He did a great job. But I don't think that I would. I don't understand watching that performance. How one would say like best performance of the year with some of the things that De Niro didn't get a nomination.
Didn't get a nomination. That was surprising that De Niro got snubbed, and yet a couple of other actors did.
That's what I was. That's the thing. The only thing I'm upset about is that. One of the only things. Leo, okay, it's a good performance, but it's not like. Defining for him, like
it's not a great performance.
It's not great. Like Adam Sandler, I feel like had a pretty big career defining performance. I still haven't seen Two Popes, and Jonathan Pryce better knock my socks off because I think Adam Sandler was a huge snub, and I think the lead, the dad in Parasite, was a big snub too. But they don't usually go for
the dad in Parasite.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. One of the biggest snubs I thought was J-Lo for supporting in Hustlers.
A lot of people.
Say what?
I didn't like her or that film. Sorry.
Oh, interesting. I'm not a J-Lo.
Morally reprehensible.
Well, you know it's based on a real story, right?
No, I know. And they encourage us to sympathize with these criminals, which it would be, if it were a more balanced film, if there were any sympathetic male characters or even any developed male characters in the narrative, it would have been easier for me to take. But they give us no insight beyond just these main characters who the justification is like not enough for their actions. And even after they're done them at the resolution of the film, there's no real remorse for their actions. I was just sitting there watching it like, what's the point? What am I supposed to take away from this film? It just seemed kind of like a ripped from the headlines, but that's about it. I wasn't getting anything from it.
Huh. Interesting. I mean, I've not been a big J-Lo fan, especially for, I mean, much of J-Lo at all. I just thought it was a terrific, ferocious performance. And she gave a real performance instead of just doing, I'm J-Lo. I'm here. Love me.
I think the grandma in The Farewell deserved it over J-Lo. And the sister in Parasite, she was good too. I would say. I was really impressed. She was one of the best parts of Parasite, I think.
Going back to what you said though, Aaron, I'm gonna have to disagree with you a little bit on and you, Tom, I suppose as well, on Leonardo DiCaprio's performance. Do I think that it's his best performance? No. But when I compare that performance to Adam Sandler's performance, don't get me wrong, I love Adam Sandler. I think he's a highly underrated actor. I wish that he got a nomination at least for Punch Drunk Love. But when I watch that performance, he's not stretching himself. I mean, he's playing a different role, but in terms of like emotional depth or like there's not a whole lot of range to that character. It's a very intense character study and he did a great job at it, but it didn't feel like Leonardo DiCaprio, whether it was a little bit flashy, maybe a little bit for the camera, and I think that was maybe the point of Once Upon a Time in America. There were a lot of moments where he's like, now I'm going to do an actor thing and I'm going to cry. And yeah, very showy, but in a way that it felt like an actor showcase, I guess is what I'm saying. Whereas Adam Sandler's performance, very good, but also a lot more subtle. And the Academy doesn't typically recognize subtle performances. We were talking about Jake Gyllenhaal in Stronger or Ryan Gosling in First Man. Or even De Niro in subtle performances.
De Niro's was very subtle too.
Don't get me started on some of those that you've mentioned. You know, I was kind of surprised. I'm not a huge fan of the movie, but the kid, the guy who played Richard Jewell, I'm blanking on his name. I thought he did a terrific job in a movie that I'm lukewarm on.
Some people upset he got snubbed. I think the issue is we just don't. I'm not mad about really the other nominees. They're like not as bad as last year, for sure. I just think we need to move up the. One, they need to use, if they allot 10 slots for Best Picture, just use the dang 10 spots. Don't do 9. Just.
No, it doesn't work like that. You have to, they do a balloting system where you have to have really? X number of votes, like second place, third place, whatever. So it's voodoo, but it's anywhere between 5 and 10.
Yeah.
Well, but I think for most part, the 9 movies they chose for the most part.
No, me too.
I think it's a better crop of movies than last year.
Oh, yeah.
Because last year's.
I think the weakest one probably is Ford versus Ferrari. That's the most commercial. And I get why they chose that.
Which is funny because that's one of those Fox movies that Disney inherited and wasn't quite sure what to do with.
Yeah. And I think that they should move up the nominees for like director and like. I personally believe they should move it up to like 7 slots. I don't think 5 is enough anymore. You have streaming services pumping out movies all the time. You have Amazon pumping out, you know, Oscar-worthy movies. You got Netflix now in the game. It's just like there's so many movies now that they should allot at least 2 more spaces for nominees.
I know in I think in one of the screenplay categories there are 6, which I thought was interesting because usually it's 5. But has anybody seen Pain and Glory?
No, but I want to. I really do. I hear he's incredible in that.
Yeah, I really like Antonio Banderas. But I was kind of that was kind of a spoiler. But if you look at the movies themselves, there's only one of them I mean. The Best Picture nominees are 1917, Ford v. Ferrari, Joker, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, The Irishman, Little Women, Jojo Rabbit, and Marriage Story. The only one I really don't care for being there is Joker, because I just don't think it's a great movie. But whatever. Joaquin, and I really hate that it got the most nominations of anything. It's like, really? Really?
I think Joaquin's definitely going to win now, just compared to...
You think so?
Yeah, it's either between him or Adam Driver, and I mean, personally, I'd love for Adam Driver to win, but I don't see Jonathan Pryce winning. No. I don't see Leo winning. He won recently. I just honestly, and then who's the? Oh, Antonio Banderas.
Nobody's seen the movie.
Nobody's really seen. So I think Joaquin. I really actually hope that Joker's score wins. I think that's the most like solid score altogether.
I think so that
1917. I would give it to 1917 hands down.
I think the score in 1917 it has one of the best pieces when he's in the city, but everything else to me was kind of forgettable. Besides that,
I love the cover of Wayfaring Stranger from 1917.
That was
good. And what's interesting is when my dad was stationed in Maryland when I was in. Elementary and middle school, we used to sing that in choir at the Bay's Chapel, and I don't think I'd heard it until it showed up in the trailer. And the fact that it has such a prominent part in the movie, not going to spoil it, but it comes at a pivotal point in the action, and I looked to see if they actually have the cover of it from the movie or the version of the movie online, and they have it, which is like, dude, release it as a single or put it on the soundtrack or something.
Yeah.
You're missing it. You're missing an opportunity. I really like 1917. I mean, we'll talk more about Oscar predictions when we get closer. I think the real determining factor is going to be who wins the SAG Award. Because actors...
That's this weekend.
Right? That's this weekend. Actors make up the single largest branch of the Motion Picture Academy. So if Phoenix wins the SAG Award for Joker, then he's probably the odds-on favorite for...
Also...
The Oscar.
The other biggest snub that people are saying is the Apollo 11 documentary not getting nominated.
Don't get me started. I went to a screening of that over Christmas break. None of that sound was synced. They had to reconstruct the sound.
It was 30,000 hours of footage and 11.
Well, he didn't know how many hours of footage. I wrote it down, but they had it was a massive amount of information that I don't think I'd even heard of. Bigger than a terabyte. Here it is. They had 2 petabytes, P-E-T-A, bytes of data, which is a massive amount of data, and none of the footage was synced, but they just had sound recordings from other sources that one of their, obsessive, compulsive crew members basically meticulously went through to sync up. I can't even imagine doing that. But it's a really well-made documentary. I got to talk to the filmmaker, Douglas Edward Miller, I think is his name.
Really?
A little bit. There was a screening. Todd Douglas Miller. I got to talk to him a little bit at a guild screening at the DGA. But I love the documentary. And shameful.
Yeah.
I wonder...
Sometimes up with documentaries recently.
Say what?
It kind of screws up with documentaries. Almost always, I feel like it's like, why didn't they include that? Why did they choose that? They just make weird choices with documentaries almost every year.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the Not a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, but
Won't You Be My Neighbor? Yeah.
Another example of one that just got...
snubbed.
Yeah, nope. I remember that.
Speaking of Mr. Rogers, I think it's interesting that people who haven't seen the movie don't realize that it is very appropriate for Tom Hanks to be nominated for supporting, because it's a supporting role in the movie. I mean, the movie's based on an article by a journalist and the movie's a fictitious account of it, but it's a great movie, though. I mean...
I blame the trailer.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, everybody loves Tom Hanks.
Yeah, you can.
With good reason.
Yeah.
But, of course, you're going to feature him more than, British actor who does flawless American accent that we see mostly on TV shows.
Yeah.
Any other things about surprises and stuff? And we'll have more Oscar coverage in the next few podcasts. But any burning surprises and stubs before we move into some of our favorites from last year that may have been overlooked?
I just think...
What bothers me about The Joker is not that it... I don't think it was a bad film. I just think it's an imitation of a great film.
It's an imitation of two great films.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is it doesn't feel... It was an interesting experiment, but, I mean, this is an exaggeration, but it feels kind of like what it would have felt like if Gus Van Sant's Psycho had been nominated. It's like, okay, but that's not really your film. You're kind of just borrowing heavily from better filmmakers. So I don't know why you're getting so much credit or attention for that.
Stealing.
At least adjust it. At least manipulate it the way that Quentin Tarantino or the Coen brothers do to make a comment on the films.
Make it your own.
Yeah, exactly. Have it saying something. This just felt like, oh, I like Taxi Driver, so I'm going to make my own Taxi Driver.
I like The King of Comedy, so I'm going to make...
Make parts
of that too.
I think Uncut Gems got snubbed all around. They should have at least been nominated for editing or sound mixing. I don't know how Joker even got nominated for editing. It's laughable.
My friend Buzz Dixon, I was telling Aaron about this before we started recording. Buzz Dixon, who's animation writer. He wrote for the classic G.I. Joe's cartoon back in the day and lots of other cool stuff. But he posted a thing on Facebook talking about, look, Joker in no way should be nominated for screenplay because it's a ripoff of Scorsese twice. It's, Taxi Driver and King Comedy. And the sad state of affairs is people haven't seen those movies. So you borrow heavily from them, put it in a new shiny package, and people are like, oh my gosh, you're awesome. It's like, ugh, no. people, do your research, do your homework. Watch the, you know, watch the movies that were ripped off and synthesized to make this one.
This is not a new thing, though. How many people know Star Wars compared to how many people know Kurosawa?
This is true.
This is just not a new thing, unfortunately.
Well, the brilliance of Mandalorian is, what did Favreau do? He went back to what George Lucas stole from, westerns and samurai pics, and people are losing their freaking minds. It's like, oh my gosh, this is awesome! It's like, yeah, because I went back to the source material.
I love that photo he just posted yesterday of George Lucas holding.
Oh, holding baby Yoda.
Yeah, that was great.
Baby Yoda, do. Okay, as we close out these last few minutes, what are some of your 2019 favorites that people might not know about or that got lost in the shuffle for whatever reason? Besides Uncut Gems, Aaron.
Yeah, I was just about to say. It's one of the movies I still think about. Another one that I've been thinking about a lot. I really liked Little Women. I did. That was a good movie.
It is on my list. I will probably see it tomorrow because I have to vote for Writers Guild Awards by Tuesday noon is the deadline. I've heard great things about it, and I've heard that Florence Pugh makes, is it Amy?
Yeah.
That Florence Pugh, it does something revolutionary with Amy because Amy's the sister that you kind of love to hate, and I'm interested in seeing it. And also, there was a lot of to-do about Greta Gerwig being stiffed for Best Director nomination.
I just think we need more nominations, more slots.
Yeah, my fear would be you open up more slots for directors and still you get more guy directors instead of more female directors. But that's on my list of things to see. I know it wasn't everybody's cup of tea, but I really enjoyed Ad Astra.
I still haven't seen it.
It was an interesting movie. For me, I describe it as anti-2001 A Space Odyssey meets Heart of Darkness.
I think that's like my seventh highest rated film of the year. I wouldn't say it's one of my personal favorites, but I really respect it. I thought it was a really well-made film.
It was a really well-crafted film. And Brad, like we're besties. Yeah, me and Brad go way back. Brad Pitt had a good year last year. ScarJo had a good year last year. By the way, shout out to ScarJo. The double nomination thing is rare. And sadly, I'd love for her to win for Best Supporting for Jojo Rabbit. For me, she's the heart of the movie. And Waititi has said, you know, that working with her was, you know, transformative. But man, she, between the two of those and a little movie called Endgame, she had a good year. And then Adam Driver had a great year with Marriage Story,
The Report,
and then a little movie called The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
So,
I'm trying to. Good feel good movie, cute one, really small budget, just fun movie to support. I really enjoyed Peanut Butter Falcon.
I still got to see that. That's one of the ones with
Shia LaBeouf. But it's just like I think what makes it a little more, and it's still like a solid film, but the story of them, how they made that film with an actor starring actor that has Down syndrome, it's just pretty incredible how they got that movie to be made. And he does a great job. Incredible.
How about you, Ryan?
Well, one of the ones that I really like that actually, I mean, we're talking about films that even didn't get attention, but I'm glad this one did get attention. I Lost My Body, the animated nominee, the French film, is from the screenplay from the filmmakers that made Amelie.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Texan. They didn't direct it, but they helped the screenplay, apparently. I just that movie just like moved me. It just got me for some reason. In terms of films that people may not have seen, The Mustang was a really good movie, independent film about like a horse program within a prison. Midsummer, I think, is a brilliant masterpiece of just uncomfortableness. I don't know that I want to see it again, but I think that.
Yeah, I just watched it for the first time two nights ago. It's
I think Midsommar, if Midsommar had come out at a different time, I see Midsommar and Parasite being similar films and existing parallel to the horror genre while not being 100% horror films. And both of them, they're kind of like art house horror.
Yeah.
I think both of them have a lot of really interesting social commentary in them. So then, yeah, Parasite would be my other one, even though, again,
it's got
a lot of attention, but...
I have one more quick one. This could be a generational thing. I really like Booksmart.
I didn't care for it.
I thought Olivia Wilde did a great job.
Yeah. I thought it was directed well. I didn't care for the script. Yeah, I did see that.
I thought it was 2019 appropriate Superbad.
That's what I was reacting to. It's Superbad with girls instead of boys, but that's
Carrie Fisher's daughter is hilarious in that movie.
Billy Lord?
Yeah, she was great.
She is very funny. Killed it. She is very funny.
Her and the guy, the really rich kid.
Yeah.
They were the best parts of the movie.
Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't funny,
she's funny, but she just does one role. I would like to see her do something besides that one role that she does. She has basically just this character that she repurposes for everything she does, which I find kind of obnoxious.
Who's that?
Billy Lord. Carrie Fisher's daughter.
Oh, Billy Lord?
Yeah. I've seen her, and it's like the exact same persona.
What? One more surprise from the nominations and one more quasi-hidden gem. I was surprised that Missing Link got nominated for Best Animated Feature. And it's fun. They like Laika. Well, I think they're doing penance for Kubo losing to, what was it? The thing with the animal, Zootopia that year. but I was pleasantly surprised by that. I was glad that Lion King did not get any major nomination, including that awful song by Beyonce. And then for something that was overlooked, which is a shame, My Name is Dolomite is a terrific little film.
Yeah.
And I would describe it as it's from the same guys who wrote Ed Wood, but Larry Alexander and Scott Karaszewski, I think. But I got to go to a Guild screening that Mel Brooks introduced, and the writers are friends of his, which is why he wanted to introduce it. He kind of did a little bit, but Mel Brooks is like awesome. But the female lead of that, her first name is Divine. She's terrific. And I was kind of pulling her for a dark horse in Best Supporting Actress category, but it didn't happen. But Eddie Murphy gives probably the best thing he's done on film in a long time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Ed Wood meets Bowfinger, but immensely entertaining.
If you have Disney Plus and you like Mel Brooks, you gotta watch that Forky, What Is Love? It's got Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks, Betty White, and Carol Burnett.
No!
It's funny. It's actually really funny.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. Betty White just turned 98, by the way. Today. You're a national treasure, Betty White. We love you. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us here in 2020, and we'll be back in a couple more weeks with some Oscar coverage.
Woo!
Bye now.